Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Horrible Podcast. I am Brian.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Drew.
And if you guys could see Tyler when that song plays, he looks like a monkey on a webcam. Ridiculous.
He looks kind of like Shockma.
Shockma!
Another episode we haven't released. but yeah, he does look like Shockma.
You guys are losing out on that one. We gotta get that one out there.
We do have to get
that one. If you've ever watched the Pantera videos, like watching them backstage before they go out to play, I'm feeling someone like hyping myself up, getting ready for the performance to go out and rock. R-E-W-K. That's what I'm doing.
Rock.
Rock. Ready to rock.
Hey guys. if you're on social media, on Twitter, we're the Horrible Podcast. Oh, fuck, I did it. I fucked up already.
Yeah. Brian, you're off the podcast.
H-O-R-R-O-R-B-U-L-L-P-C-A-S-T.
Next week, we're going to get Phil Anselmo.
Horrible Pecat. The Horrible
Pecat. You can't even see this. We're the Horrible Pecast. You can't even see this, the kid.
The at Venomous Maximus, they did tell fun stories about Phil Anselmo.
They did.
About how he was fine, then all of a sudden, like, someone would show up, like, some fan, and he'd, like, switch Anselmo, his
Anselmo
character on him. He's like, what's going on?
Whoa. I just want you guys to know that kid died on 5 times from heroin.
God. Whoa.
Yeah.
He did. Whoa. Speaking of people going off, have you seen the video of Mike Tyson going off on the guy, the Canadian talk show host?
Yes. Well, that Canadian talk show host was pretty shitty to him. Like when he said, you're a convicted rapist.
Do you think? Well, the funny thing is, he's coming out in favor of Rob Ford, who doesn't need any help in the crazy department. anyways, that's our political discussion for the day, guys. If you want to find us elsewhere on the internet, just look for The Horrible Podcast, H-O-R-R-O-R-B-U-L-L. That's all you got to do. Horrible. Horrible it.
And also, if I'll mention this again at the end of the podcast, but if you're anywhere near Chattanooga, October 31st, why don't you come over to the Frightening Ass Film Festival 4.
Fat Four.
We're showing Demon's Rook. Just announced the Babadook.
You always do that.
Babadook, Duke of Earl. And then
Marmaduke? What?
We're also going to be showing, at Demon's Rook, we'll have the director and producer James Sizemore and Tim Reese, I believe you pronounce his last name. And also, we'll have Texas Chainsaw Massacre 40th anniversary cut. With Jeff Burr, director of Leatherface and Pumpkinhead 2.
Which I really like. I know the Pumpkinhead movies didn't get a lot of like acclaim at the time, but I really liked Pumpkinhead 1 and Pumpkinhead 2 a lot. Yeah. That one of the scaredest I've ever been was when Pumpkinhead 2 came out. Just after that movie was over that night, I was like 10 at the time. Lying in bed, imagining, like, what would I do? How would I react if Pumpkinhead just walked in here right now? Just the worst.
Well, first of all, you'd hear those hot bugs. That They always signal a Pumpkinhead arrival.
It's awful. It's terrifying.
As I recall, Leatherface 2, it's the movie itself doesn't...
Not Leatherface 2, just Leatherface.
Oh, thanks. It never really jumped out. At me as far as the movie went, but it has probably the best trailer of any movie almost. The whole where they equate the chainsaw with the lady in the lake and Excalibur,
right.
It gets thrown out to Leatherface, and then the saw is family.
That's right. I forgot fantastic. That was the one.
Pretty fantastic trailer.
And even though I watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre growing up, I watched Leatherface the most, and I most associate. I remember the scene at the beginning of that movie the most. Isn't that the one where he catches the guy? Like, don't they, when they're on the road trip at the beginning, don't they catch the guy as the Peeping Tom in the bathroom at the beginning? Like, there's all the pictures of the women on the walls, and then they see the hole in the wall at the gas station in the beginning. Do you remember that part?
No, I haven't watched it in a while.
I think that's at the very beginning of Leatherface, and that is one of the most iconic scenes for me growing up, because I didn't have a scale of hierarchy for movies growing up. I just liked everything I saw. I was like, oh yeah, this is Leatherface. Obviously, if it's a Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie, it is good. So I'm going to like whatever happens in it. And that I just watched that one a shit ton growing up.
I've seen bits of the transfer of the new one. It looks amazing. Like
the 40th anniversary edition?
Yeah, clean and crisp the picture is. It's remastered in 4K, so it looks amazing.
Wow.
And for people who haven't seen Leatherface, I'm sorry, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which includes me in an actual theater.
Oh yeah.
It's gonna be pretty rad to see it with a bunch of people because you know the movie, so it's you'll know what's coming. Especially Franklin, he's my favorite character. Y'all don't have too much fun up there.
We just picked up Dracula.
So yeah, that's
still one of the scariest parts of a movie is when that first time you see Leatherface and he slams that door after
the metal door.
Yeah. I still think the scariest part of that movie is when she's Sally is pushing Franklin through the woods. And Leatherface just fucking appears and mows him down. That is still terrifying to this day to me.
Absolutely not to push a wheelchair through the woods there.
Yeah,
that's a poor decision.
You got to give up. What was Stephen King thinking in The Dark Tower with Susanna? I mean, how are they going to get that wheelchair anywhere in Midworld?
Jesus Christ. I want them to release that ever. Just ever. In my lifetime, I just want to see that produced. Like, now I know how people who really cared about all of the Tolkien movies, books felt. Like, I just want to see it on screen. I don't care. Good, bad. I just want to see it. Let's do it.
But guess what, guys? Tonight's episode, or this episode, is...
We're going in the shitter.
About none of those movies. This episode, Septic Man.
It's my favorite Misfit song that never got released.
I really did think this was going to be a Toxic Avenger ripoff.
It still kind of is.
At first, I kept thinking, like, are they going to kind of, like, are we going to get that moment in this movie where they do the Dark Knight Rises, where they're like, why don't you use your real name, Toxic Avenger?
But they did. But you know what they ripped off? They ripped off all the fun stuff. Like, they ripped it off of this movie and left it out. That's kind of what they did.
Oh.
I mean, you can't sit there and deny it. I mean, all of a sudden, especially when you get to the, and there's, I'm going to go ahead and talk about the end really quick, because just.
Spoiler alert.
Just the end credits has like this really silly song, like this theme song, Septic Man, that plays over the end credits.
That's right.
That doesn't fit at all with the movie with the fairly serious kind of movie that played all before it. It's very strange. It's like that was much more trauma-esque the song was than anything else in the movie.
I also kept thinking that as the guy turned into Septic Man, that what he had on him was actually just kernels of corn from people's shit.
Ingested
corn.
I think a lot of the movies we've watched recently are like Samuel Beckett plays, but without any real introspection. Like, it feels like with some of these movies, when the plot doesn't move forward, that they're supposed to be thinking about something, but I don't ever actually know what it is they're thinking about, and so it makes me really bored with them.
I thought this one particularly falls victim to that too, because it feels like there are places where it could be making some sort of point about, some sort of social commentary or anything like that, but it doesn't.
Like The Bay. Like, The Bay did a really great job. That's the first movie. The first movie I thought of was Saw. And I was like, what is Brian forcing us to watch with that first scene with the woman and the toilet? Did that ever come back? What the fuck was that?
It really did set a tone that the rest of the movie did not keep up with.
And we were eating, and I was like, the sound's so great, the Foley work. I mean, and I have no problems with that, although I did watch an episode of The Nick right afterwards, and this one woman had lost her nose to syphilis, and he's like, Clive Owen's doctor was like poking around in the tissue doing that, and I was like, oh my God, I just watched that last movie, and I'm totally fine. This is absolutely horrifying.
Yeah.
But I thought that first scene was great. I mean, I was like, I thought the first act of the movie, whatever you want to call it, maybe even a little bit longer than that, I was really intrigued and I was really into it. And I was like, this could be a really great hidden gem. I was like, I saw some of the reviews beforehand. They were terrible. And I was like, all right, give it a chance. And for a while I was really there with it. And then I just wasn't anymore.
Yeah. The problem is it had a really stylish first act and it was going somewhere. And then it just stopped.
It went right to the sewers.
Oh.
Well, there was a blockage, so it actually didn't make it to the sewers.
Also,
it's clogged up.
It's amazing how much dead stuff, just, bodies that are just in the sewer at all times.
Yeah.
Are there, though?
Well, in this sewer.
Oh, and crocodiles.
And they never really explain what the sickness is, which is Stephen McCaddy?
McCaddy
is the governor.
Wasted mayor.
Yeah.
He was a mayor.
Mayor.
It was kind of wasted. That was another part where I thought they could have done more with it, and they just didn't.
For me, it just seemed like they caught him at a con and were like, hey, we're going to go in this back room, and whatever you say for 10 minutes, that's where we're putting the movie. We'll pay you. We'll give you like $1,000. Just say some crazy shit for 10 minutes, and then we'll put it in the movie. Guaranteed.
it was the writer of Pontypool. So I at that point I was expecting more because I felt like there was something that was said in Pontypool.
And also directed by the Monster Brawl and
that's not as much of a positive.
Exit Humanity, which I've heard of a lot. I've heard positive stuff about Exit Humanity. I have not watched it yet.
That being said,
I've not heard positive things about Monster Brawl. No. I still want to watch it. But
the thing is, the effects for the movie were still really interesting.
They were. Yeah.
The accumulation of the gruesomeness on the main character's face was pretty amazing.
Undigested corn, guys.
It really needed smell-o-vision.
No, it didn't. That first scene, does that come back at all, or was that just a vertical slice that was an introduction to what's happening?
That's what I took it as. It was just showing what was going on with someone. I saw nothing more than that.
I think it was just to pull you in. Like, hey, guess what?
It's the hook.
So, just in a...
That hook brings you back. Sorry.
Just to let people know what this movie is about, and you're going to have to help me with the plot, because I get confused by one point of it. So, there's a worldwide... I guess there's a local... Is it just local?
Yeah, seemed local.
Water...
Localized.
Localized water infestation that's causing horrific diseases... Which is interesting because we have all these weird diseases right now that are springing up, like Ebola and whatever's happening with in Atlanta, the CDC and all of that. And people are getting this whatever, like all these things like necrotic fasciitis. They mentioned that at one time. And the septic man is paid to do what again? To go to stay? Like what is that? What is the MacGuffin?
To figure it out, to be the big hero, go in, stay in there, figure out what the problem is, fix it, and then emerge from the sewer as the conquering hero.
And
so that's at least
so weird because why would you pay a local plumber, septic man, to do that?
Well, he already had that history where he had redone he had repiped the city and had done something to fix some problem they'd had previously. That's what the strange guy from Supernatural mentioned.
Oh, yeah. Right. That guy was weird.
He usually is.
Also, guys, in any other movie we'd have been watching where there's some character talking to himself and explaining things, I would think it was just a shitty way of exposition. But
right.
After having worked with my ex-father-in-law in his plumbing business, I can guarantee you that that's how crazy those fucking people are.
Really? Huh.
Oh God, they're so fucking nuts. Like,
oh, I thought you just meant like talking to themselves about what they're doing.
They do. Like, I have a clear vision in my head, and I've always thought it'd be an amazing film, like a scene in a movie of sitting under someone's house. We were installing. So if you live in a basement, they had to install this ejector that pushes the shit from like basement bathrooms up into the regular pipes. If you haven't been plumbed for that,
whoa.
Like it has to push all the excrement and stuff up into the regular pipe flow. So we were sitting in a crawl space. It was high enough space for us to kind of stand up in. And this guy was, his name was Corey, and he was like 280 pounds of just... I saw him pick up hot water heaters by himself. He was a fat guy, but he was strong. Like,
right.
Just like one of the strongest men competitions.
Muscular.
Yeah. So we were sitting down there.
Vermagnuson or whatever his name.
Yeah. And I was sitting on a pile of just dirt underneath the house taking a little break. And he was in underneath there showing me how you would kill a man, Dalton style from Roadhouse, with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. And he's sitting there. His big ass frame, giving me karate moves under this house.
just like you did with the microphone.
Jesus Christ. What the hell am I in?
Yeah. I as I watched this movie, and speaking of like filth and shit, I was wondering, every time we watch a gross movie, I think, would this make Brian puke? Would this affect Brian? Because this movie is not for metaphobes. Like there's a section of Doug Love's movies where he talks about, he does a not for a metaphobes bit where he talks about movies where people puke. This movie has a lot. I mean, more by double than puking than I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of puke.
There's a lot of puke.
A lot of puke, a lot of shit.
Oh yeah, the puke really got pukey.
Yes.
Do you think that so you've done some of that work, Brian. Do you think that would make you puke? Would that take you over the edge, do you think?
Which part?
I don't know. The dead bodies and shit everywhere and all of that.
Man, I don't know what would make me puke these days. Like, it would take a lot to make me puke.
I just want to, I kind of want to do like a fear factor of Brian smell to puke ratio. Like what it would take. Like where is it?
Every time I think, oh, this is the worst thing I've ever smelled, it never fails that the next year something else tops that. And I'm like, oh, this
next
is
year,
the,
next week.
Or next week.
I bet it would, like, I wonder if durian would make you vomit.
What is that?
Because I've heard that smells like a dead body. It's the fruit that even
Andrew Zimmern.
Andrew Zimmern will not eat because he's like, this is the most disgusting thing on the planet.
Last summer, we had, I got two horses brought over from Mississippi.
Oh, yeah, those definitely smell bad. Mississippi horses traditionally smell.
They were buried for a week. It was an adult and a baby, or a foal, brought over in a rider truck. From a 12-hour ride in the back of a rider truck, dropped off into my lab, and it was pretty bad. And I thought, oh god, this is good. And like on its way, I was like, this is gonna be horrible. I'm not gonna be able to do this. And of course, you know, the initial smell hits you, and then you're like, all right, I'm over it.
How long does it take for you to get over a smell?
At least it usually takes over the night, because what happens is that usually that something that's bad will get into your nostrils and into your, like, it'll just attach to the hair in your nose and it'll just stay there. And no matter how much you shower and snort soap up into your nostrils, it just won't go away.
So does that affect, like, your hunger? Like, are you ever like, god, I just don't feel like eating. This is gross.
I have never been smells and like sights, and never done that. Sometimes I've seen things, like, you know, we do get abuse cases and stuff like that that come in from counties of things that I've seen things, and the idea of the suffering and stuff like that will overwhelm me, and I'm like, I can't do anything. I'm not gonna be able to eat tonight because I just keep thinking about this.
Yeah. Oh, that sucks.
So that upsets me more than like the smells and the sights.
Severe empathy.
Yeah, well, you know, when shit dies, that's not a problem for me. But the idea that something suffered is usually the thing that kind of pushes me to the edge, right? So, you know, so that's the stuff that bothers me more than any kind of. I mean,
but has like shit. I wonder if the shit smell specifically, like, if that would be different. I don't know why.
Did you ever work in retail? I know
I did.
I mean, you. I know you worked at your parents' drugstore, but that was not. I mean. Nobody was shitting in the bathroom at that place, was it?
That wasn't a public bathroom.
Okay.
I mean, I had to go to some houses and like deliver like hospital beds and some things, and that, and we had one where we delivered to this guy, and we took it there and put it together and put him in it, and then we got back to the store and had to go back and pick it up because he died.
Oh, wow. What? I mean,
yeah.
Like, and that so, day?
We went places that was didn't he in smell it still? That good.
Did you have to bring him back to the...
They moved him.
Okay.
They moved him at that point. But I mean, we went to places. I went to houses that have not... smelled particularly great.
Oh yeah, that was when I worked at the pet funeral home. Going to people's homes was the worst thing ever.
Well,
filth people would live in sometimes. Don't call the police on me.
The worst thing, it's not the smell of shit that is bad. It's the accumulation and sort of when it becomes stagnant that is bad. Like the worst thing that happened when I worked at a bookstore was a guy. Came in wearing a colostomy bag, and he must have spilled it everywhere in the bathroom. And it had been
just an overflowing bag, like, oh god.
And it, when we opened, like, we smelled it through the door. Like, after he left, he just closed the door. Like, he didn't even attempt to clean it up. He just dumped it everywhere, like, just like almost out of spite, like, fuck you, I'm an Auburn fan or whatever. It was all that. That's one of the worst things I've ever smelled. And it was the accumulation of shit. It wasn't just like, oh, this smells like poop. It was, oh, this has been here for a while.
Well, I think you hit on the nail on the head on that, because I used to work with a woman who had a colostomy bag, and shit that comes out of your ass. I don't know if it's like maybe just coated with your normal shit smell,
right?
But when it comes from a colostomy bag, it misses a step, so it is a raw. Smell.
There's
and if
some,
the sewer smelled like that, then
I think it does. Like, I think there's that just sort of like bacterial smell. Like, there's something more severe and sharp about
it. This movie kind of reminded me, like, what if Charlie Kelly from Always Sunny in Philadelphia was to be tasked with saving the city?
They made this a Charlie job.
Yes, this is Charlie
work.
Job.
Well, it like the problem with the movie is that, like, even though you it shows a lot of and sorry, I'm distracted. There's a spider crawling in the window outside. There's I can't stop looking at it now. The problem with this movie is that it doesn't really convey
a snake behind you.
Part of it. part of the problem is that even though a lot of bad things are happening, it doesn't really get conveyed except through people throwing up. Like, this must smell bad, or I feel bad about killing my brother, or whatever.
Well, I mean, I guess it even gets even lessened by at the end of it when I guess it's all fixed. Everybody just moves back in. It's like, the aftermath of, like, Night of the Living Dead always seems to be, it's over. The world's done. You know, we're not going to be able to do anything normal again. And here it was just like, oh yeah, he unplugged the pipes, and so we're good to go again. Just come on back, guys.
Did he do it? I thought it was like the ultimate irony that he had spent all this time in these pipes and had sacrificed himself, and yet it was the girlfriend just walking through and pushing some buttons that fixed it.
Yeah.
True. Yeah. Well, she didn't come back until after it was fixed, though, I thought.
Oh,
after
maybe.
After they'd said people could come back is when she came back.
Oh.
I think maybe what he did with the bodies kind of deal, and then with that, I assume
he let them hit the floor, right?
Yes, he did.
He let the bodies hit the floor. Yeah, I mean, I was with this movie for okay, so we're kind of complaining about this movie, but the first 30 minutes I thought were fantastic, but
yeah,
about,
I was definitely on board.
About 35, 40 minutes in, I was like, what are they going to do with the rest of this movie?
And honestly, the introduction of the pipe to pipe people just didn't add anything that it should have. I mean, and at that point, that's where it kind of starts to go away at that point.
But the first, like, go ahead.
That got weird.
Yeah. Well, and the first act of the movie was very stylish, and it had almost like a Shaun of the Dead quality. I was like, oh, this is going to be kind of fun. Like, watching this character go through all these pipes and sort of fall and have mishaps and that sort of thing and encounter things in these pipes. Like, I found that really compelling. What I didn't find compelling.
I thought that Septic Man looked like, kind of reminded me of Shaun. What's his name? Simon Pegg. He kind of reminded me of Simon Pegg. Sean.
Oh, yeah, sure. All gingers look alike.
Sean.
Yeah.
But, like, the problem...
What do you call it when a redhead person gets mad?
What, Ryan? Redhead
person. A ginger snap.
God.
Drew's laughing. So I know it's funny.
I smiled.
That's laugh. The other problem was that later on in the movie, I felt like... pretty early on in the film, we get the idea that this guy is not going to make it. Like, once he starts getting all this crud and stuff on him and starts growing Toxic Avenger-like features, that's pretty much where the movie's over for me. Like, well, obviously he's not going to recover from this. There is no tetanus shot that's going to get rid of whatever's wrong with him. So, like, right. I find that to be super problematic. Like, they could have stretched the stakes out later in the movie and been like, is he going to make it or not? Like... But pretty early on, it's like, well, now that he's infected, I guess he's just going to wallow in this for a while. I don't know. Like, I don't get, like, what the arc was for that character. There didn't seem to be one.
The trailer and the plot synopsis both give that away, though. It talks about the transformation and shows it in the trailer.
So I didn't watch the trailer. I went in cold.
Yeah, so I knew to expect both those things, but I was expecting something. I know we've mentioned Toxic Avenger, but I was expecting something more along those lines of that was where it's going to go. He's going to transform into something, and then that was going to be the impetus for him to then possibly figure out, like, that it was some sort of conspiracy thing that was set up for, you know, to poison the town or something like that, or to assist the mayor in keeping his job or something of that nature.
Or something,
and then him become like some sort of, you know, anti-hero, you know, sort of deal who sits there and saves the day, a la, you know, Toxie kind of deal. But
or something. Like, I wanted something to happen. Like, once he got trapped, he did nothing else. I mean, he had no more agency in the movie once he got trapped. None. No agency whatsoever in this film at all. And that's really problematic.
He did get stabbed by dumb Lou Ferrigno.
Yes, didn't I? He sounded just like Lou Ferrigno. I was like, oh, the Hulk. Nope, that's not him.
It's Robert Mailette. He's actually in The Strain. He's been a lot of things. He always plays a giant person. Usually don't hear him talk. That's one of the first times I've ever heard him talk.
He's also Dracula in Blade.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh.
No.
Yeah, whatever.
No. That was Dominic Purcell.
Yeah, same thing.
Oh, yeah, that was Dominic Purcell. who's in a movie we did. Right?
How is that even a joke?
I don't know. Because I get that. I laughed in my mind.
What was the joke?
Is this what we're doing now?
I'm curious. I want that broken down for me. I want to understand that one.
That I knew it wasn't Dominic Purcell, and that I thought that would be funny.
Okay. You guys.
Intriguing.
Shake hands.
Oh, it's the big guy that he fights in.
That's Dominic Purcell right there.
Oh, yeah, and he was in Pacific Rim. He's the big Russian.
Which he didn't speak in that movie either.
Nope.
I think he said Das Vidaniya, but that's about it.
Well, he was a professional wrestler.
No.
That does not surprise me. He almost sounded like Andre the Giant a little bit.
Is he in Monster Brawl? See if he's in Monster Brawl.
I bet he is.
Uber immortal in 300.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm with you.
And as I said, he was in he's in The Strain. He is the master.
That makes a lot of sense.
I'm looking.
I'm with you there. I remember him from 300.
Monster Brawl, yeah, he's Frankenstein.
Yay! Yeah. I laughed uproariously when he got when Septic Man was trying to get out of the sewer and he gets unknowingly gets just stabbed in the side.
I thought he got stabbed in the arm because that's why it started messing. Because he started pulling the flap back later. He's like, oh, it hurts, but it feels good. I thought that was why. I thought
arm
that was
it.
Was
sad. What's it matter?
That's
the thing.
I like movies like this. If something I just expected something to happen in the third act. I'm okay with a character sort of being trapped for a while. But like Drew, like you said, I expected him to work his way out of this and then fight back somehow. But he didn't do anything in this movie.
I agree. I mean, and that's ultimately the thing. It's like I was really with it. And I was getting really ready to praise it. Like for that first little part, right. I was like, we might have found a sweet ass little gem here to sit there and talk about and praise. And then all of a sudden I was like, no, we haven't.
Yeah.
I'm really ready to do something else now because nothing has happened in a while. And what is happening isn't interesting.
I almost did an experiment where I was just going to, after about 45 minutes where he was just not doing anything, I almost turn it off. Like, I wonder if they'll even notice. I wonder if I can get away with just saying, yeah, nothing really happens for the rest of the movie. Turns out I would have been right. And maybe I did do that and am just bullshitting now. No, I didn't. I watched the whole thing. But this is one of the movies that I feel like I could have just turned off and not lost anything for the third act of the movie. Like, it doesn't even have a traditional third act. Not really.
Yeah, and that's where I was ultimately, like I said, I'm ultimately disappointed as much as anything with Tony Burgess is his name. He's the guy who wrote this and wrote Pontypool.
Pontypool's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it did exactly what we were saying, what we talked about, where it had a message, so to speak, about something to say and what it was doing, and not a lot happened, but more happened, and
a satirical movie. I mean, it had tension and satire, and there was a question of what was actually happening, and the problem is I didn't care. I had no stakes in this movie. I just had no sort of I'd buy into what was happening.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it ultimately had such potential and ultimately just ended up falling flat. I mean, I didn't have any more reaction to it. I had a really strong positive reaction, and then I had a pretty...
I think the word you're looking for is stagnant. Oh, my God.
And then a pretty, I can't even say a strong negative reaction because my reaction just stopped.
Yeah.
It's like I was having this really positive, I was like, yeah, and then all of a sudden just nothing. It's like I felt nothing about it.
Yeah.
And then it ended. It was like, oh, okay. Well, that was, and then it disappointed me because I thought back to, wow, I was really liking where this was going, and then it didn't keep going anywhere
at all.
Was interesting, and I got disappointed. And so then I got even more disappointed in it there because I was like, damn, it was on its way somewhere, I thought.
Yeah, and it just sort of petered out. Like, I didn't get why the girlfriend was still involved or not involved, and then she showed up, and they still didn't really have... They had one interaction, and then she left, and it...
And how did she know how to do all that? Pull all those switches there? I mean, come on.
She had the schematics.
Yeah, sure she did.
He taught her all his septic work. I found the early part of the movie pretty engaging, though, and that's... I guess that's what is disappointing, is that it... This movie definitely had potential. Yeah. It just, what, I guess, instead of just keep saying I was disappointed, what would you have done differently to the third act of this movie?
Something that involves him getting out. I would have had the scene at the end where he gets out with the fisherman, happened earlier, and go there.
Like, maybe find what's-his-name and kill him, the mayor or whatever. Right,
right. Even if he just becomes, even if he's now just some sort of murderous mutant creature, mm-hmm. that still would have been something to happen there. But like I said, with all the Toxic Avenger, allusions or at least homages or thievery, whatever you want, however you want to look at it. I mean, I would have wanted him to become some more heroic figure and have him uncovering some sort of conspiracy. Like I said, this was all set up to benefit the group that sent him down there, maybe. Like, mm-hmm. them, they had set it up, and, like, I mean, getting rid of him was part of their plan to do this, you know, to get away with whatever they're trying to get away with. And then he gets out, like, even the end where he's like, "Where is Septic Man?"
Yeah.
And I would have gone with something like that where he, you know, that's earlier and he arrives and, you know, because they're using him as either the scapegoat or the, you know, the fall guy or the fallen hero, and then have it, you know, have him turn the tables on and be like, "No, you did this and it was all you." And, you know, I don't know.
Go ahead.
Do you think, I mean, this movie was written and then produced.
That's yes, how that usually
it
happens.
Was, and made, in that order. But
do you think that at any point during that process, someone's like, "Hey, what happens in the third act?"
That's a good question. I mean,
I just wonder. I mean, I know there's a lot of independent films are made, and a lot of especially horror. It seems like a genre that is ripe for the independent filmmaker to make. I mean, there's we don't get too many. I guess there. All sorts of, but this seems like a lot of people make independent horror.
It's
films.
Harder to make a period historical drama.
Exactly.
Let's say that.
Right. Let's say that. But at some point, someone has to say, "Hey, man, what the
nice
fuck's
shot.
Happening?
Yeah.
Here?
Where? What? What? Do we, what? What does this movie do?" And I know we are just.
No, I think, but I would venture to say that we've watched enough to kind of know what. We know what we like, but we also kind of have an idea that, well, you know, if a movie falls flat, it falls flat.
We're not in the minority in this opinion.
Right. I mean, yeah. it has some great stuff in it. It has the opening, which was great. It has a great, like, you know, great effects, great...
cinematography early on.
Yeah, it looks amazing, but at some point it falls flat, and we run into that issue a lot. So you got to think, well, at some point, whoever financed this had to say... "Hey, man, I think you should look at this third act a little bit because it kind of falls flat. What else would we do with Septic Man?"
I think
this is their improved third act. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean...
That's always my question, though, is when I watch films that do this, it's like, someone had to pitch this.
I also think this what happens with independent cinemas is often what happens with, like, independent books or video games or something, is that they are lovingly crafted by fewer voices. And so we have the opposite problem of big budget movies, which they are uninteresting because they are more produced. And so what happens is that they hit all of the points that a movie should hit. Like, we have all these things, but they're uninteresting because there's really no, like, single vision here. Just the cooks in the kitchen sort of thing. But with an independent movie or an independent
double vision.
Do I?
Double vision.
But the other problem, the inverse of that, is independent things which are crafted by a single person who may become too attached to what they want to produce. I'm sure that whoever wrote and directed this, you know, in tandem, became really enamored with this third act, and maybe they weren't able to convey sort of the nature of man, kind of Caliban of, you know, aspect of this movie. And, you know, maybe that's it. And it's just they couldn't craft a third act better. They revised it with, like, "We still really want this. Like, we want to see what happens with this character. And we want to see him transform. And that's the purpose of this movie." And it just, like, they carried through their vision, but it's just not something people are interested in. I mean, that happens with art sometimes.
Yeah. True. I think they got lost in the... The reason the first part works is it's a more, I mean, granted, it's more familiar. It almost feels like some sort of, you know, crazies, you know, zombie-esque type beginning that we're familiar with. And then it ventures off into, surreality kind of throughout the rest of once he gets in the sewer. But that becomes problematic, I think, to some regard, because, I don't know, we're already expecting this reality that's already been set up, and then it doesn't ever quite gel. Like, I still don't get who the two guys were.
No, and it could have...
Lord Rosh and Giant.
I think that it should... Like, the third act could have been, you know, he was locked in this area for so long that he eventually is able to escape because of the big guy helping him. And then he has to escape from the cannibal teethed man that's chasing him down.
That's pretty awesome when he got his teeth and they were sharpened.
That was pretty awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that character was cool. It was just wasn't enough to kind of like, we needed more of him, like in a more threatening manner.
I also don't, I thought it was a British movie for a while, and then we have all these weird accents. I'm like, where is this taking place?
In Canada.
Well, it was some point when they showed the Canadian money. I was like, is that even real?
Is that real money?
Canadian loony.
Are they playing with loonies and toonies?
The I would say, going back to Drew, like how you would fix this movie, I also think it would be interesting if he got out and people saw him, and then ultimately he was blamed for what happened precisely because of the way he looks, and no one knows that it's this original character who went in. And so the irony is that he saves them, but then also he is the scapegoat at the same time. Like, that's an interesting ending to this movie, even it's instead of
Dwayne Jones shot.
Yeah, yes, like the end of Night of the Living Dead. And instead we just get a weirdly comical ending to this movie that has been so uncomical for two acts. I mean, the first act had not a sense of humor, but just like, all right, I get that this is all kind of gross and haha. And then it becomes so self-serious. And then the end, it's like, well, here's a joke at the end. I don't know. Like, I just, the tone is.
Our credits are.
Yeah. The tone goes like way haywire in this because we're suddenly supposed to take it seriously when these two sort of like weirdly Shakespearean characters show up halfway through and we don't have any sort of tie to. They're kind of, it's kind of like a Shakespearean Texas Chainsaw Massacre characters, like the Hewitt family or something. I just don't get it.
Right. They like these, like the big guy knows that he's going to be killed by this other guy at some point.
And like, I don't care about that character. I don't know.
And were they serial killers and just killing people and dumping them?
I guess.
I think you're asking the wrong questions because no one knows. I mean, that's no idea. And where did they keep getting the bodies? I don't know.
And why did he get hired to go do this? It seemed like they were doing this. I thought that they were keeping these two guys, like the company that owns the water, like whoever that company is, was keeping these two people there to work. I don't know. I just had a lot of weird ideas about who those people supposedly were.
I do kind of like the idea that at these water plants, there are just crazy shirtless filed teeth assholes walking around at all times, like protecting and doing their jobs.
Just like Kinko's people, like the night shift at Kinko's. Just you never know what you're going to get when you go in there.
Leave them alone. Just don't look them in the eyes. It'll be fine.
Just put your copies on the table and wait.
Well, here's what becomes even more, I guess, kind of problematic about the movie is apparently it sounds a lot more interesting when we talk about it in this regard, because there's a lot of open stuff that I don't get, and that's interesting to me.
Yeah.
But how it was conveyed in that middle to end was not interesting.
Yeah.
Like, talking about it now, like, those characters in those situations actually sound more interesting than when I was watching it and not able to, you know, to piece anything together and asking these questions, but not in an interested sort of way, because there was just, you know, there was just kind of strung together.
And my problem is too, and I need to work on this, is I need to watch these films over the weekend, not on Tuesday night before the podcast, because I am, like last night, Destiny had just released and I was just dying to go back out there and play Destiny. So I was like, come on.
I mean, I think that plays into it, but I mean, part of the problem with this movie is that it has a sense that, and I don't think that the filmmaker, I mean, Pontypool is a much sort of, it's more of like a confident movie, and it has a more confident sense of story, and there are some gaps in narrative in that movie, but they seem to play well overall. Those gaps seem to accentuate what story is there, and that is not true here. This movie seems way less confident in that they... Like, it's almost like, we're not going to give you the narrative. Like, we don't owe you that. Like, we don't owe you what's going on. And I'm okay with that, like Drew said. But you've got to give me something else to be interesting or visually stimulating. Like, the characters have to move. The characters have to do something. We have to have... I don't even have to have a resolution, but we have to have characters do things if you're going to have that many plot holes and gaps and just not reveal narrative to me as a person watching the movie.
I know this is never going to happen because of the legal ramifications of this. But what if, like, the next phase of filmmaking was to people to go back and start remaking films the way they wanted to see them end?
I mean, like, there's a YouTube channel called How It Should Have Ended, and they do animated versions of big budget movies. It's a really entertaining YouTube channel. You should totally check it out.
It's an interesting. I mean, it's a good concept. Like, what would you like? All right, so the studio is like, okay, well, we had a lot of complaints by how this ended, so we're gonna give this so and so $75 million to do their version of it. See how? Let us know how they thought, and then let the fans decide what it would do. I mean, I can think of, like, with this movie, you can think of, you know, at least three or four different ways we could have made, like, the last act more. I mean, they had a whole.
I mean, my response to that,
kind of like chase through and do like all sorts of cool stuff with by Septic Man going shit house on these brothers, but they just failed to. You know,
that's what fan films are about.
Now we're talking about budget, possibly. It's probably true stuff for some things like that too.
I would just say, like, your response should be to make. I mean, that's why movies get made. Is they see you watch a movie that you like or do not like, and you're like, I can do that better. And then you go make your own movie, and you improve upon the things that you hated or disliked about that movie. That's what I think the response is.
That was one of my favorite quotes ever. Was when Rob Zombie made House of a Thousand Corpses. Someone was interviewing him, and they're like, "So why movies, Rob?" And he made a comment. And he goes, "I was watching a movie, and I thought, God, this is fucking horrible." And I thought, Jesus, I can make a movie just as horrible as this. I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, his idea was like, well, I can make a shitty movie just as much as I can make a good movie. So these people are making shitty movies. Why can't I make a shitty movie?
The movies that always make me want to make movies. I found this every time I watch Nightmare on Elm Street 4 and 5. Every time I watch it. And it's not because they're bad. It just makes you, it's like, man, I want it. That's what I want to make. I want to go back right then at that point in the late 80s to be able to make, you know, sequels to some, you know, horror franchise at that point. Like, nothing makes me want to make movies. I don't watch Halloween. Like, I want to make movies. I watch Nightmare on Elm Street 5. And I'm like, man, I want to make movies.
I think the same thing.
Movie is like, if you could have, like, you have your wishes granted, and that's what Drew wishes for, is time travel, to be able to go back and intercede in, like, the Nightmare on Elm Street 4 and 5 movies. Like, guys, I'm from the future. Let me tell you how this should end.
And Stephen King also has a similar theory about writing, where he says you should read not just good books but bad books so that you can see how you would improve upon them. Because if you see that you can improve upon someone else's work, then that's usually a key to start writing. And it's movies that have an interesting premise and interesting elements that make me want to make movies. Ones that I think I could do better. You know, there's some really interesting parts of the middle Halloween movies that just are so bad. They're just, the follow through was so terrible and of their time, that I would love to see, like, better versions of Halloween 4 and 5. And like you said, I mean, you look at Nightmare on Elm Street. I look at those Halloween movies because I watched those Halloween movies a lot growing up, and I really wish I hadn't watched them as much as I did.
The cowboy. We never get that revealed to us. The guy in the cowboy, the man in the cowboy boots, who breaks Michael out of the jail, blows him out of the jail. Who is the man with the cowboy boots?
Hang on. I don't remember Halloween.
Randall Flagg.
That well, but when you say blows him out of jail, you're talking about actually, like, not like gets him out, or like blows him until they're out of jail.
It's an explosion.
I tell you.
We'll
that.
Just leave it at that, and you decide which explosion
it is,
Brian.
I'll be honest with you. I don't remember Halloween. Anything after Halloween 3, I have a very...
Danielle Harris?
I do remember Danielle Harris.
The clown costume.
I do remember her, but I remember very...
The man with the cowboy boots.
Small bits of it.
He is... Mark Twain always wrote about the mysterious stranger, and he even wrote a novel, number 44, The Mysterious Stranger. That's who the guy in the cowboy boots could be.
It's
the Randall Flagg of
Interspace.
That series.
I haven't seen Interspace in several years, but isn't there a man, mysterious man with cowboy boots?
The cowboy.
Yeah.
Know who it is. It's the cowboy.
Cowboy,
yeah.
And who is that guy? It's that guy, though. Who is that guy?
He was in a lot of 80s stuff.
Yes. Well, who is
Robert
that?
Cardo.
Yes. I loved
in Star Trek Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
The hologram guy.
I also learned some. This is way off topic, but I see the podcast sort of petering out. Yeah. But
way off topic, Tyler.
I also learned that the voice of Andrew Ryan from BioShock was also Quark from Star Wars: The Next Generation.
Q.
Armin.
Armin
Kitrarkian.
Yeah.
He's also the principal. In Buffy the Vampire Slayer,
which is crazy. I had no idea that was Andrew Ryan.
No, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, I learned that because I listened to a podcast called Tone Control with the guy who made Gone Home, and he interviewed Ken Levine because he used to work for him. And yeah, they talked about that, and they talked about that guy's acting. And his voice is really high, so they had to scale it down like by 1.5 steps to make it sound like very dark and
deep.
That's
what I was wondering, yeah.
Does the man, does the sweat of your brow not make it yours?
No, says the man in Washington. The sweat of your brow is mine.
We've just tripped Tyler's Bioshock counter. He's
back. You got me started. All right, guys, we got to go so I can play Bioshock.
Did you go ahead and buy it on the iPad, too?
I seriously thought about it.
I know. I figured you would. As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, my God.
It's just another way to play it.
I know. It is another way for me to experience. I want to buy the adapter that you can plug the 360 controller in. So they say that it's actually not that bad if you play
your iPad?
With the adapter. Yeah, they make one.
I didn't realize that.
So they say it's not that bad if you use the adapter. It's just there are literally no shadows and shaders in that game, so it's just very like rough sketches of the characters.
Robert Picardo was in Dead Heat. Forgot about that.
Who was he?
Yeah.
I remember that.
Dead Heat, number episode 8.
Was it that early?
It wasn't really. He was in Total Recall.
Maybe 11.
That was it. He was in Total Recall.
I think it was 11 or 13.
There's ways of us looking at this stuff, but I don't.
It doesn't matter at this point. But God, that's a long time ago. We're on what, episode 70?
We're up on episode 73. Two, 72 or 73.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know, man.
That's a lot. During October, we should release like a lot of episodes just to have them released.
Well, you know, we have all the back episodes and they're all under your control. All you have to do is edit them together.
Yeah, that's true.
You got nothing else to do.
Congratulations.
Thanks. More. More, please.
Happy birthday, Tyler.
So, yeah, I mean, as far as suggesting this movie, I would say watch the first 30 minutes and then turn it off.
You know what I would say, too, is...
Don't start it if you're not going to finish it. So yeah. Just don't
and also,
watch it.
Remember, guys...
It's interesting, though.
This is just, like, our opinion, man.
Yeah.
You know, do what you... Watch it if you want to watch it.
I don't understand why you have to be such an apologist at that point. If we don't like it, it's fine.
I just want
it's
people
okay.
to know that, hey, man, it's okay to not like stuff sometimes.
Right.
All right.
But if they don't... I mean, huh?
Hey, man. It's fine.
Hey,
everybody.
Hey, guy. Hey.
I mean, there's other things you could waste $4 on.
Yeah. I mean, I
shit out at least $30 worth of money every day.
This should go to Netflix, and I would say start it. Yeah. Watch the first few minutes, and if that grabs you, and the thing is, once he started to turn into the Toxic Avenger, I am a big fan of trauma movies, and so I personally felt betrayed by that. So it not turning into a trauma movie of some sort was kind of like a betrayal. He also kind of looked like Bill Paxton from, what are you doing?
Something behind you. Is that on the wall?
What?
You don't see the black spot right up here in the wall behind you?
It's my clock.
No, but there's a clock, but to the up, down to your bottom right.
Oh, no, that's just a hole in the wall.
Oh, your head must have been covering it earlier. Yeah. I just noticed it. Okay, there he goes. Okay, sorry.
So I felt personally betrayed by it, not being more of a trauma movie. And or like Near Dark. Was it Bill Paxton who was in Near Dark?
Yeah.
Like, he kind of looks like Bill Paxton.
Gets
from
all
that
burned
movie.
Later.
Yeah, so, I mean, it could have been like a really cool exploitation movie or like a really cool, just like grimy, you know, Lloyd Kaufman-esque movie. Also, I lost my shit in Guardians of the Galaxy when Lloyd Kaufman showed up. And I was telling Kate, and Kate had no fucking idea. Because like, that's Lloyd Kaufman, Guardians of the Galaxy.
He was when they were on the planet and they were doing the big chase.
Yeah.
In the middle of the day, he was up on one of the balconies cheering.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was in the prison as they were. It was just him like cheering on. I was like, oh my God, trauma. My childhood.
The funny thing is, I think it's a very much, it's like, I can see a lot of people making the same and be like, oh, look, it's Mel Brooks.
Yeah, Lloyd Kaufman is, yeah, he always reminds me of Mel Brooks. You're absolutely right about that.
But it's I love that. And I was trying to explain awesome. To I was like, he used to work for it. Never mind. You're not going to.
Restarted. Did he do Romeo and Juliet?
And Terror Firmer, I think.
Oh, my God. I love Terror Firmer.
Maybe it was just Terror Firmer then. I know he did one of them.
That's the only
No, I think he wrote Romeo and Juliet as well. I think that was his first script, and then Terror Firmer was the next one.
Okay.
So, because I...
Slither is still so great, because Slither is definitely a trauma. Yeah, has a lot of the you can see his trauma background in Slither.
It's,
let's just say.
Yeah, well, I also think James Gunn has brought that sort of, like... whimsy to a $200 million movie.
Yeah.
And that it paid off. You well, need you know, more filmmakers.
Well, you know, it's the same thing with Joss Whedon doing
the Avengers.
Avengers. It's like those guys get it.
I would compare at this point. I don't know if compare is the right word, but I think there's a lot. The similarity in style of writing with James Gunn is much more Joss Whedon. But I think his origins are a lot more Peter Jackson, though.
Right.
Coming out of that bad taste, Dead Alive kind of world. Mm-hmm. And then.
Oh, absolutely.
Something
absolutely.
Like that. But when James Gunn broke into the bigs, he then wasn't making like super serious Tolkien adaptations, though.
And I don't want to see him do that. I'm glad that Guardians of the Galaxy had that sense of whimsy.
Oh, yeah. It's fun.
It's what made it made it so amazing. And it's funny is that, you know, what I always find funny is like we have seen these guys make other stuff, so we are already fans of theirs. But people who, you know, tons of people out there who this is their first experience, Guardians of the Galaxy was their first experience with James Gunn, just blown away by how like amazingly good he is at what he does, like conversations
it,
and.
It, and it's so weird that people, a lot of people have written reviews of that movie that. Say like, oh, this movie is full of nothing. Like, why is this a big movie? And it's like, no, the reason this movie is so great is because it plays off all of the other tropes that are just so self-serious and it turns them on their ear. It's almost like a satire of comic book movies that is better than most comic book movies. It's crazy.
That part where he does, he takes that guy's knife in the prison. The guy's like, he's like, "Do you want this knife? I don't care." He's like, "That's my favorite knife."
Yeah,
I laughed. That was my favorite.
That whole scene.
Guardians of the Galaxy next.
That whole scene must be where he got away with a lot because there was the leg joke was amazing and just all of it was really good.
His like way like under the radar jizz joke when he walks into the spaceship. Don't shine a black light in here. Yeah.
It's great, yeah. So go see Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm
thinking of imagining Peter Quill jerking off in his spaceship.
That movie still won. That movie was still number one this weekend. It still made another $10 million this weekend.
Did it pass Avengers as like the number one Marvel film so far?
I know it was the highest grossing movie of the year. I haven't seen that. Yeah,
I can't speak to that, but yeah, go see Guardians of the Galaxy.
Do you think that James Gunn, like when he sees that every weekend, he's like, "Fuck yes"?
Probably.
So
he wants to be successful.
As much time as he put into it, I mean, you know, several years.
And if you follow him on Twitter and stuff like that, he was very. I mean, just to watch it evolve too was very cool. Like, from a film that nobody really expected much from, about these characters that were not mainstream Marvel. Really,
right. and the guy that did his last movie was Super.
Yeah, shut up, crime.
Yeah. So follow us on Twitter. Don't forget to rate and review the podcast on iTunes.
And
so,
do or do not watch Septic Man.
Yeah, do or do not. There is no try.
Yeah, don't try to watch it. Just do it or don't. And also remember, October 31st, Chattanooga.
Fighting Ass Film Fest.
We will be at Fighting Ass Film Festival 4. Pretty sure we'll have all three of us there. So, the Baba Duke, Demon's Rook. I'll just rhyme it. Baba Duke, Demon's Rook, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
That didn't rhyme. Hook.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Chainsaw Massacre Crook.
Yes. And then Tim Baba Cook. Tim Cook will also be there.
Who?
Tim Cook.
Isn't Tim Cook from Apple?
Yeah, he'll be there.
Yes, then, Tim Cook from Apple. We'll be giving out free iWatches.
The Barking Legs Theater is next to a babbling brook.
Oh, I get what you're doing now.
Don't look at me like that.
I'm sorry that it took me a while to get it.
Well, you know.
I'm slow. I'm old. Slow on the uptake.
He is old.
Yeah, I am old. Hey, so thanks for listening. And we will, I guess you'll hear from us next time. Or not.
I'm Tyler for the Horrible Podcast.
I'm Brian.
I'm Drew.
We'll see you next time. Don't forget to do all those things on the internet.
Hand motions.
Sorry, I was just pointing at you to say, like, hey, you're the host guy, so do the host thing.
It's just like a blurry hand.
I thought he was doing like Dave Cooley. I was like, cut it out.
All right. We'll see you next time.